Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutta Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashakya Deshakarma Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gauravaktavanda. Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nashta Prayashu Apadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Narayana Rishi, the supermost human, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is reduced almost to nil, and loving devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Thank you for tuning in online. I request the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas and all the Vaishnavas who are listening that I may say something useful today to increase our Krishna consciousness. So we are in the first canto, fifth chapter. The title of the chapter is Narada's Instruction for Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva, 16th verse.
Online listener, they can leave comments and questions at youtube.com/salajadhyam/live. Sorry, I can ask the question. If you want to ask the question.
Do I need to announce that or did they hear you? During the class and after the class, you can ask questions online, and we will give you that information after the class. So today we're doing 1, 5, 16. The shloka is Vichakshano Syarhati Veditum Vipor Ananta parasya nivritita sukham pravartamanasya gunaranatmanas tato bhavandashaya chasitam vibhoho. One more time. Vichakshano syarhati veditum vipor ananta parasya nivritita sukham pravartamanasya gunar anatmanas tato bhavan darshaya chasitam vibhoho. Synonyms: vichakshana, very expert; asya, of him; arhati, deserves; veditum, to understand; vipho, of the Lord; ananta parasya, of the unlimited; nivritita, retired from; sukham, material happiness; pravartamanasya, those who are attached; gunai, by the material qualities; Anatmana, devoid of knowledge and spiritual value. Tata, therefore. Bhavan, your goodness. Darshaya, show the ways. Chastitam, activities. Vipo, of the Lord. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. And one more time. The Supreme Lord, who is unlimited. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Report. Theological science is a difficult subject, especially when it deals with the transcendental nature of God. It is not a subject matter to be understood by persons who are too much attached to material activities. Only the very expert who have almost retired from materialistic activities by culture of spiritual knowledge can be admitted to the study of this great science. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that out of many hundreds and thousands of men, only one person deserves to enter into transcendental realization. And out of many thousands of such transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Sri Vyasadeva is therefore advised by Narada to describe the science of God directly by relating his transcendental activities. Vyasadeva is himself a personality expert in this science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it, and Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is the right person to receive it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost theological science, and therefore it can react on the layman as medicinal doses. Because it contains the transcendental activities of the Lord, there is no difference between the Lord and the literature. Literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby, they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material diseases. The expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. Devotional service is a dynamic activity, and the expert devotees can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peaceful life and transcendental realization. Omagyana Timinangasya. Gananjana Shalakaya. Chakshur Unmilitamyana Tasmai Shri Gravinamaha. Ancha Kalpatri Deshcha Pipa Sindhu Yaevacha. Patitanam Pavanavyo Vaishnavyo Namaha. So here in this verse, we are hearing that this subject matter, the Bhagavatam, and of the activities of the Supreme Lord is not to be understood by those who are too materially attached. So it's not to be understood by those people who are too materially attached. And we heard in the previous verse that the inclination for the condition jiva, the baddha jiva, his inclination is to be materially attached and to want to enjoy material enjoyment. And this is due to many lifetimes of association with this material enjoyment. So it becomes the inclination of the jiva to want to participate in this. The human beings, by long material association, life after life, have a natural inclination by practice to endeavor to lord it over material energy. They have no sense of responsibility for human life. And what is that responsibility? The human form of life is the chance to get out of the clutches of illusory matter. To revolve in the cycle of transmigration in a series of lives numbering 8,400,000 is an imprisoned life for the conditioned souls. The human form of life is a chance to get out of this imprisoned life, and as such, the only occupation of the human being is to reestablish his lost relationship with God. So this transmigration within the material world, as we know, is a form of imprisonment and a form of punishment for the jiva soul. So this enjoyment that he thinks that he's enjoying here is actually quite illusory and quite detrimental to his ultimate well-being. So in order to enter the Bhagavatam and the pastimes of Krishna, one needs to understand to a certain degree, that two things. One, that this world, this material world, is a place of suffering and imprisonment. He needs to have some sense of that. If a person thinks that this place is a nice place, you know, the material world can be enjoyed, then the messages of the Bhagavatam will not resonate for the person. So one, he needs to have some sense of that the material world is a place of suffering and I need to do something to get out of it. And number two, he needs to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Person. In Bhagavad Gita 4:3, Krishna tells Arjuna, the reason that I am telling you this knowledge, which is a very deep and mysterious science, the only reason I'm telling you, because you are my devotee and friend. And in the purport, Prabhupada states that a devotee is somebody who thinks that Krishna is the Supreme Person. And somebody who doesn't think that is not a devotee or could be considered a demon. So this science can be entered by somebody who at least believes that Krishna is the Supreme Person. He may have, you know, various levels of material attachment, but he needs to at least have this preliminary understanding of Krishna as the person, as the Supreme Person. And then we hear that this Bhagavatam acts as a medicine for that material attachment. So the hearer of the Bhagavatam may be on various levels of being materially attached, but as long as he can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Person and that this world is a place of suffering, he can enter into the Bhagavatam and he can have the Bhagavatam act as a medicine for that material attachment. In Bhagavad Gita 4:10, Krishna says that the only qualification to enter into this mysterious science is to develop the urge to hear. So this is the sort of the only qualification. One must have the urge to hear this message, and one should have a preliminary desire for self-realization. So if one has those things, he can enter into the Bhagavatam. But if one is too materially attached, he will not hear the message. In the purport of Bhagavad Gita 4.10, Prabhupada says, as described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are too attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep this same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. So for one who believes that Krishna is a person and that Krishna is the Supreme Person, this literature purifies him of the material disease. Literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby, they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material disease. So there are two ways that this medicine acts. One way is through the actual transcendental sound vibration. And we'll hear in the following shloka that I will read is that the super soul is actually the one who cleanses that desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee. So one way the medicine acts is through the transcendental sound vibration, and Krishna himself is purifying within the heart. And the second way that the medicine acts is that one hears the messages and the pastimes, and he cognitively understands and hears, you know, what Krishna is trying to say and reveal to us, and he tries to understand the pastime cognitively with his intelligence and his mind, and he tries to apply that to his life. So that is the two ways that the medicine of the Bhagavatam acts. One is through the transcendental sound vibration and Krishna himself, and the second way is that devotee cognitively understands the pastimes and he tries to apply it to his life. So in the famous shloka 1.2.17, we hear that Krishna himself, in the form of super soul, he cleanses the desire for this material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee. It's the famous shloka, Shrinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Hridyantashtohiya Padrani Nidunoti Suhritsitam. Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages. That is the preliminary qualification, develops the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Messages of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, are non-different from him. Whenever, therefore, offenseless hearing and glorification of God are undertaken, it is to be understood that Lord Krishna is present there in the form of transcendental sound, which is as powerful as the Lord personally. So here we learn that although one must have the initial desire to hear the messages, it's also not a cheap process. One must prove one's sincerity to Krishna. It says in the shloka, the benefactor, Krishna is the benefactor as a super soul of the truthful devotee. So one who is sincere and truthful, and one who has developed the urge to hear. And the hearing and the chanting must be offenseless. So if we are sincere and we honestly want to hear the message and we are practicing being offenseless, then Krishna cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart. So it's not just so cheap and easy to come by. One must be sincere in his endeavor. And then in the following shloka from the Srimad Svakata Krishna shloka, 1-18, we read that every day. Nashta prayashu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Nashta, destroyed, prayashu, almost to nil, abhadreshu, all that is inauspicious. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about this material attachment, you know, and what is this disease that the conditioned soul comes here with and that he should purify, which is in his best interest. Because this material attachment, this material enjoyment, is an illusory conception. It's not a part of who we truly are. It's not a part of our spiritual self. It's not a part of the spirit soul. So we have to constantly hear about this, right? Through hearing the messages of the Bhagavatam, cognitive understanding, how we are not this material body and we are not this material enjoyment, and it is illusory, and this helps us to not be so attracted to it. So there are so many pastimes to that end. A little bit later, I wanted to discuss the pastime of Maharaj Chitraketu and his dead son, and how he comes back and preaches to him. But before we get there, I wanted to talk about, you know, just dissect further this idea of material attachment. What is it? I remember when my great aunt was leaving her body, and she had just had, you know, very like painful experience of surgery, and you know she was going to leave the body, and it was all like very painful. She had a brain tumor, and you know, instead of, she had just, you know, been through a lot of suffering, and instead of thinking, you know, why did I have to go through all the suffering, and surely there must be something on the other side, and I'm trying to prepare myself for the other side, and you know, instead of thinking that way, she was thinking like, who's going to take care of her house and her things when she leaves? And this was her, you know, absorption as she was suffering and dying of old age and disease. And she was completely absorbed in like, who was going to take care of her house and her things. On the other hand, when I was small, like most of my life, I had this idea that, somehow I had this idea that this world is impermanent and temporary, and that we're all gonna die one day. I had this idea as a very small child. And I didn't want to do anything or engage in any activity that I didn't think had permanent value. And because I knew that we were all gonna die, you know, I was questioning, like, so then what does have permanent value? And this is how we should be thinking, you know, if we're all gonna die one day, then I should, and this situation I'm in right now is temporary, then, you know, I want to engage in that which has permanent value, not the things that have temporary value. I remember as a child thinking that my parents were going to die one day, and although they're taking care of me now and they're playing the part of my parents, they're going to die one day. And I had this idea as a child. And then I didn't want to do anything that, you know, other children were like making like little drawings, and as children make those pictures with crayons and things and like hanging them up on the wall, but I had this idea that I didn't want to do that because all these drawings were not permanent. They didn't have permanent value, and they were something temporary. So what is the use of me making these drawings and hanging them up on the wall if they're not permanent and if we're all going to die one day? So somehow I had the sense of the impermanency of this life and this world, even as a child. So Prabhupada says that the beginning of spiritual life is to understand that I am not this body and I'm the soul, right? That's the ABCs of our teachings. I'm not the body, I'm the soul. You know, but how many of us really live that day to day? So Prabhupada says that Shloka 2.13 is the beginning of spiritual life. And what is 2.13? Dehinosminyatadehe kamaram yavanam jara tatadehantarasprabtirdirastadranamuyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So we have that wonderful drawing in our literatures of this shloka, and Adidev Prabhu has also made a wonderful sculpture of it for the Fate Museum, a project back in 1978, of how this body is changing and getting old and growing and then decaying, and the soul is just passing through that body. So that, Prabhupada says, is the beginning of understanding spiritual values and spiritual life. So if we're trying to not be attached to this material life and the material body, what is it that we are trying to be attached to? Krishna tells Arjuna, there was no cause, I'm sorry, this is Srila Prabhupada's purport, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old ones to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering according to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause for lamentation. So this should be our focus as we're trying to detach from the material conception, from the material body. Our focus should be on something better. We're getting something better, something permanent, something blissful, something which doesn't die, doesn't decay, doesn't get old. So it's actually a very optimistic and positive situation for the devotees, and this should be what we are striving for. So it's not depressing, it's not negative, this idea of trying to be detached from the material body and the material world. It's not negative. It's not like, oh, I have to try to be detached. It's actually a very positive and joyful notion. Why would we be attached to something that is going to get old and decay and wither away and die? Why would we be attached to that? There's something much better waiting for us. So we have to constantly hear these messages. In the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, he instructs his sons of the demons classmates. He gives a metaphor of the soul in the body, and the metaphor is that the soul is likened to a tree, and the various material bodies which the conditioned soul gets is likened to the fruits of those trees. And those fruits, they grow, they ripen, they decay, and they wither away, but the tree remains standing like the soul. And this is in 7.7.18. Just as the fruits and flowers of a tree in due course of time undergo six changes, birth, existence, growth, transformation, dwindling, and then death, The material body, which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances, undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. The fruits and flowers of a tree seasonally come and go, but the tree continues to stand. Similarly, the transmigrating soul accepts various bodies, which undergo six transformations, but the soul remains permanently the same. Ajonitya shashvatayam purana nahanyate hanyamanishari. The soul is eternal and ever-existing, but the bodies accepted by the soul are changing. Since the body is the external feature of the soul is not dependent on the body. Rather, the body is dependent on the soul. There is no possibility of maintaining the body permanently or eternally. Therefore, there is no need for us to be overly attached to it. And Prahlad Maharaj goes on to say, the soul has nothing to do with the material body. One who is actually learned must give up the illusory conception of life in which one thinks, I am this material body and everything in relationship with this body is mine. The individual exists in darkness when he thinks that he is the material body and that everything in relationship with the material body belongs to him. The individual exists in darkness when he thinks that he is the body and everything with the body is his. One must give up his illusory conception and thus become fully aware of everything. This is Prabhupada saying that. Of course, we need to differentiate between material relationships and spiritual relationships. So we do want to focus on the idea of spiritual and permanent relationships and connections. It's not that we're going to be in a spiritual world with our spiritual body all by ourselves. There's going to be spiritual relationships. So one very nice pastime which illustrates this material attachment and also the absurdity of material attachment is very nicely depicted in the pastimes of Maharaj Chitraketu and his son, who I'm sure most of you are familiar with the pastime. Maharaj Chitraketu was very morose because although he had many, many wives, how many wives did he have? 10 million. Although Maharaj Chitraketu had 10 million wives, all of them, by some chance, could not have children. They were all barren by a chance or providential arrangement. And so he was very morose because he very badly wanted a son. And although he had many personal and kingly opulences, he was morose because he could not get a son. So this is an example of material attachment. You have 10 million wives, and somehow all of them are barren. 10 million is a large, large number. Somehow all of them are barren, but still, and you have, you know, sort of everything, but still you insist on having, you know, this one material thing, a son. So, so this was his material attachment that the pastime was going to help him purify. So sage Angira came on the scene and he said, yes, I see Maharaj Chitraketu, you are very morose because you cannot have a son. So I will give you the benediction that you will get a son. However, this son will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. So although Maharaj Chitraketu heard that he will be the cause of lamentation, I still want that son. Okay. So he was able to have the son by sage Angira's benediction with his first wife, Pritidyuti. And then, of course, the other, you know, 99.999 million wives were envious of this, and so they poisoned the young son, and the young son died. Do you know how old the young son was, Prabhu?
6 months
when he died, the baby. They poisoned the 6-month-old baby. So materially speaking, this is very, very sad, right? It's very, you can't even hear that they poisoned a 6-month-old baby. However, by the grace of Narada Muni, who arrives on the scene a little bit later, this young boy preaches to the family, who is very morose of having lost him, and he helps them to get rid of their material attachment. So Narada Muni arranges that the jiva re-enters the body of the dead six-month-old baby of the son of Chitraketu, and the living entity in the body speaks very nicely. The dead son of Chitraketu says, "According to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, and sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two as my parents?" He goes on to say, "In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. They also act neutrally, they meditate, they despise one another, and they act in many other relationships. Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related, except for spiritual relationships. Just as gold and other commodities are continually transferred from one place to another, in due course of purchase and sale, so the living entity, as a result of his fruitive activities, wanders throughout the entire universe, being injected into various bodies and different species of life by one kind of father after another. A few living entities are born in the human species, and others are born as animals. Even though one living entity becomes connected with another because of a relationship based on bodies that are perishable, the living entity is eternal. Actually, it is the body that is born or lost, not the living entity. One should not accept that the living entity takes birth or dies. The living being actually has no relationship with so-called fathers and mothers. The living being actually has no relationship with so-called fathers and mothers. As long as he appears as the son of a certain father and mother, as a result of his past fruitive activities, he has a connection with the body given by that father and mother. Thus, he falsely accepts himself as their son. Thus, he falsely accepts himself as their son and acts affectionately. After he dies, however, the relationship is finished. Under these circumstances, one should not be falsely involved with jubilation and lamentation." And after the jiva soul spoke this way to the family of Chitraketu, when the conditioned soul in the form of Maharaj Chitraketu's son had spoken in this way and then left, Chitraketu and the other relatives of the dead son were all astonished. Thus they cut off the shackles of their affection, which was due to their relationship with him, and gave up their lamentation. After the relatives had discharged their duties by performing the proper funeral ceremonies and burning the dead child's body, they gave up the affection that leads to illusion, lamentation, fear, and pain. Such affection is undoubtedly difficult to give up, but they gave it up very easily. So I'll just finish with one last point, and that is the idea of yukta vairagya, right? As devotees, we don't just practice vairagya, which is just dry detachment, which is very painful. We practice yukta vairagya, which is blissful and based on higher taste. So some of you may know, I came from a yoga organization before I became a devotee in ISKCON. And I experienced this idea of this dry renunciation and dry vairagya, right? Vairagya without the yukta vairagya. Not yukta vairagya, but just vairagya. And I saw how unpleasant it was and how it made people very, very unhappy and very miserable to just, you know, this horrible idea of just not being attached to anything, right? It's not natural for the soul to be like that and all, and I actually got to see firsthand the results of that, and it made the people like very unhappy and very mean, and they could very easily, you know, be mean to other people. Like, you know, even people within the organization, they were just, it was acceptable to be like mean to somebody on the idea that you were practicing detachment. You know, so it was very bizarre and eye-opening to see this, and I knew that this could not be spiritual life. You know, this idea of detachment could just not be right. So our detachment to material things is based on attachment to devotees and Krishna. And this is very nicely illustrated in the teachings of Kapila Dev to his mother, Devahuti, which is in the third canto. So Kapila Dev is preaching to his mother. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. Attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door for liberation. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door for liberation. Here it is clearly stated that attachment for one thing is the cause of bondage in conditioned life, and that same attachment, when applied to something else, opens the door for liberation. Attachment cannot be killed. It has simply to be transferred. Attachment cannot be killed. It has simply to be transferred. Attachment for material things is called material consciousness, and attachment for Krishna, or his devotee, is called Krishna consciousness. Consciousness is therefore the platform of attachment. Consciousness is therefore the platform of attachment. Despite the statement that one should give up attachment, desirelessness is not possible for a living entity. A living entity, by constitution, has the propensity to be attached to something. That propensity for attachment cannot be stopped. It must be utilized for the best purpose. Our attachment for material things perpetuates our conditional state, but that same attachment, when transferred to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, is the source of liberation. That same attachment, when transferred to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, is the source of liberation. So I'll stop there, see if there are any questions. We're just waiting for the questions now. And can you say once again how they can ask a question, Prabhu? Okay, so the way to ask questions is to go onto our YouTube channel, which is ISKCON Alachua / Alachua Temple Live. You can search it in Google. You know, YouTube ISKCON Alachua Temple should get you there. Search it in Google. And then how can they ask questions on the channel? They can write the comments. They can type the comments on that YouTube video to ask a question. Is there another way that I can ask a question? Okay, well, you can also text your questions to 352-221-0041. So that's youtube.com/Alachua Temple/live. You can ask questions there, or you can text your questions to 352-221-0041.
I have a question.
Okay, yes, we can have some questions until we...
You mentioned that consciousness means attachment, lucid experience.
This was in teachings of Kapila Dev to his mother, Devahuti. This was in 325.20, if you want the actual verse. 325.20. It's Kapila Dev speaking to his mother. I can read that part again. Yes, that is a very nice idea. It's nice for us to discuss them and dissect these ideas and relish them. Hold on a sec. Prabhu is going to get a mic. Yes, that is the shloka.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes, same attachment increases towards the sadhu or the sainted person. Then it opens the door of liberation.
Exactly, that's the shloka. I don't have the Sanskrit in front of me. Yes, every learned man should know that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul, but that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door for liberation. And then in the purport, it says attachment cannot be killed, it has simply to be transferred. Attachment for material things is called material consciousness, and attachment for Krishna or his devotee is called Krishna consciousness. Consciousness is therefore the platform of attachment.
It is.
Very, very exciting.
That's very nice. Means what I understand, that nothing to be given up, but to our focus. Or it's not the body or the object of our senses. It's the attitude that I have towards a person or a object. The attitude that I have, what distinct, whether it's material or spiritual. So if I have an attitude towards a person, or he or she belongs to Krishna, what I can do to remind this person to come closer to Krishna, then it is spiritual.
Very nice.
If I see the person is object of my senses, whatever it is, good or bad way, then it is material.
That's very nice. Yes.
So it is not, so this is very nice verse you picked, that it is the attachment, it's eternal in that sense, but focusing that attachment on the temporary things will cause pain, whether we like or not, doesn't matter.
Yes, it's very nice. It will cause pain. Mm-hmm.
And then if the same attachment, if we can find the relationship with Krishna, whatever the temporary object we are around or dealing with, if we can find the connection that it is for Krishna's pleasure, then it is spiritual. A very interesting point also you made, that Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person. This focus or this vision will not come so long one is materially attached. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes devotee ask the question, that how come I cannot meditate or focus on the Radha Sanskrita more than a few minutes, not even a few minutes, few moments. But that's a very nice point.
Yes, Prabhupada makes that point in the Gita.
So
yeah, they cannot imagine that the Supreme is a person. The best they can do is think of it as something impersonal.
If someone asks a question, So we are not this body, but when Prabhupada says something like, I'm an old man, anytime, what should we understand? What is your
I think that we do have to, we exist in the material world, and so we cannot just like ignore it. You know, I can't just walk around and be like, I am a spirit soul, you know? I mean, we have to function within the material world, you know, and practice Krishna consciousness within our like material situation. You know, and I know Prabhupada always would say the right thing in the right situation. So depending on who he was speaking to or what was the point that he wanted to get across, he would say, you know, he would say the right thing. So probably in situations like that where Prabhupada said, you know, I'm an old man, it meant that he wanted the younger devotees to like carry on his mission. So if you think about it, it's still sort of in the context of Krishna consciousness, even though it's a sort of material idea, right?
Yeah. I got a few online.
Okay.
Ellen Simpson. Oh, this is very good. She said that...
She's always listening.
Thanking you for speaking
to an empty room, such an austerity. And there is another Mataji, her name is Carissa C. Very nice sobering class. Attachment is a gradual process and we can feel it happening in our Krishna consciousness lives.
Yes.
But what if it is not happening fast enough for us? How can we speed this process up?
That's a really deep question. Really nice.
Her name is Carissa.
I don't know who Carissa is, but it's a nice question, Carissa. You can see that she is like thoughtful and aware, and you can see that she has the desire for it, which, as we've been hearing, is a preliminary qualification to enter into this knowledge and to enter into devotional service. So it's, I commend Carissa for having that desire. If it's not happening fast enough for us, well, as we've just been hearing, that attachment is a matter of consciousness. Consciousness is the platform for attachment. So in that sense, like, we have a choice. We make choices in our lives, and we choose what we're going to put our attention on. Right? So we all, and Carissa, we all have a choice. You know, do I want to perform more devotional service? Do I want to chant more rounds? Do I want to shift my focus more to devotional service? Or do I want to shift my focus more to material life? So there is a choice, and we can choose. And if we make the endeavor, and if we make that choice to hear more of these messages of detachment, of the Bhagavatam, to chant more, if we make that conscious choice, right, attachment is on the platform of consciousness, so we consciously change our consciousness and we consciously endeavor in a certain direction, then Krishna will speed up the process. Krishna will help us. So it is a function of our own choice and how we choose to direct our consciousness. Mm-hmm.
There's one more question.
Okay.
Can you
say in the microphone, where is the Chitraketu story in Bhagavata?
Oh, the Chitraketu story is very, very ecstatic story. Oh, you know, I love that story, and it may seem like so heavy for some who have that attachment, but... It is in the sixth canto, yes. I have the actual shloka. You don't have the chapter, but if you go to the sixth canto and you see the breakdowns of the chapters, just go to the Maharaj Chitraketu chapter, but it's in the sixth canto. You don't have the chapter written down.
One more question. Class of your short gay devotees. I don't know this.
What?
I'm not sure what the
It says, does this number work? I said, yes. Class audience short 8 devotees. I don't know what is it. It's new policy. Anyway, was not a really question to the class. Another question. How can we increase our desire to hear about Krishna from someone?
Well, I think that's a very similar question to the one we just heard. How do we increase it? Well, we make the choice. We make the choice to come closer to Krishna, and then Krishna reciprocates. And once we get a little taste and flavor of the fact that Krishna is, you know, reciprocating in our lives, then naturally that awakens the desire for more. But we have to put in that initial endeavor where we can get to that state where we get some of that reciprocation, we get some of that higher taste. And then over time, point was made in one of the shlokas here, that over time, you know, if we keep making the endeavor, Krishna, we become fixed, right? There's the nine stages of devotional service, right? And at the first stage is initial faith, or ado shraddha, which is the initial desire and that initial faith. And then the second stage is sadhu sangha, right? So the second stage is we associate with devotees, and preferably, you know, advanced devotees that will help us. And then the third stage is bhajana kriya, which is we engage in the various acts of devotional service. We just engage, bhajana kriya. And the fourth is it nishta or ruchi? Which is the fourth stage of devotional service? Bhajana kriya, nishta, which means steadiness, right? So we have to develop some steadiness. This nishta is very, very, very important. We have to develop some steadiness, and the point was made in one of the purports that it's a daily process, right? Daily we engage in devotional service. And once that nishta is developed, then follows taste or ruchi. So that is the progression. It's all very scientific, and it's all been laid out for us. We just have to put ourselves in the process, and we just have to put ourselves in the association of devotees. So from our end, it doesn't take much. We just put ourselves there, right? And Krishna will help us. So we have to develop. So it's adaushraddha, initial faith. Then it's sadhu sangha, association of devotees and sadhus. Then nishta, develop steadiness. And then ruchi, the taste comes. And once we get that taste, we'll want more and more of that taste.
So, temple management answered the other question. It says, Hare Krishna, as per our temple president's announcement today and yesterday, the temple is currently in a state of lockdown. During class time, there is only to be the speaker and one other person to help facilitate the class. Thank you for your understanding in this difficult time. Awesome.
I was thinking how this, you know, quote-unquote lockdown situation is actually very conducive for Krishna consciousness. I mean, it is a little difficult to have devotee association personally, but it is very conducive to going inward, right? It's very conducive to meditation. It's very conducive to not being distracted by material engagements, right? This situation is actually showing us how temporary all these things that we're so attached to and that we engage in every day, they're temporary. At any moment, they can be taken away, at any moment. So I think it's actually given us a very nice vision of detachment, of material detachment. No, like so many things that we engage in throughout our day are just like busy work, you know, for the body. So I think it's a nice opportunity to see the impermanency of our material engagements. And you know what? The situation will change soon enough. So, you know, don't be so despondent about it. It will change soon enough, as everything does in the material world. So we'll finish there. Grantarat, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.